It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
No tornadoes this week. That's a good thing.
It's been quiet out there, hasn't it?
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it would be a good thing.
I want to give a shout out to a whole bunch of people in the Midwest, because I got a bunch of friends that just got blasted by that stuff. And it's pretty extraordinary. I mean,
in terms of losing homes, or what do you mean by
yeah,
blasted?
I mean, just their family and friends are all in the wake of just what was obliterated. And just going like, oh, my lands.
Was that in Joplin or other places?
In Missouri and in that old Kansas City area. I mean, I got a couple of phone calls of folks who were on the side of the road in the midst of what was going on. And you're just going like, to listen to them while it's going on. You're just going like, oh, my. And, you know, I think what's exciting is what's happened out of the aftermath of how people have bonded together. I mean, you going through a whole bunch of fires in Malibu, you have the same sense that, you know what, these have a moment of reckoning for a lot of folks of just bringing you back to what really matters. And so that's a positive. I mean, it's like, it's devastating, but at the same time, the things that really matter are the relationships, the people. And it was just interesting when I picked up Time, you know, here they have in the Twister's Path, and yet the primary article was on the science of optimism and how they said that hope isn't rational, but so why are humans wired for it? I didn't think the article was that amazing, so it's not like, oh, wow, I got to read this article.
Okay.
But I think the whole subject matter of hope, that's what I was jazzed to hear out of some friends who had just been devastated, is that there was still a place for hope. And I'm going like, the only place I know to get that is from God. Because everything else seems pretty transitory and overnight. I mean, killer storm, it's wrapped in rain that they can't even see what's inside it, and yet you got three massive vortexes that are spinning inside. They couldn't tell that this was about to land and just devastate everything. And you're just going like, well, how do you deal with that? And who did that? And it's like, I don't think who did that. It happened. And how do you recover from that? And that's just that's the need, I think, in the human soul that has a sense of hope. And I don't know where to draw it from another source other than that which is eternal.
And that, what the article pretty much gets at, I mean, I remember reading it, but I don't remember being struck by it.
No, I'll be honest.
In terms of it not being rational, I guess that's what I wanted to ask you. They're saying there's just no rational human reason for us to have hope. I mean, usually they do some kind of evolutionist bent or something.
One of the things that they were looking at in terms of the brain's memory functions is that they haven't really recognized that, you know, they thought that the brain was there for recording memories. And yet a lot of it is there to help people imagine the future. And that's something that was the thing that jumped out at me. It was is looking at that and going, where does the optimism that some people have, where does that come from? When you look at all the filters and all the information we get just piled on us left and right, news by definition is something bad. It doesn't really make ratings to say, oh, good things happen in America today.
Sunny day in California yesterday.
Yeah. And you're just going like, I look at all those impulses and they're saying, gosh, there is something that is in the human brain that is – they're finding fascinating in terms of the optimism and what it does for people. And I just go like, you know, I don't know where to draw it from in terms of the horizontal plane. I do know where to get it from God.
Yeah, I'm just going
spite
back
of
to,
anything.
Yeah, I'm just going back to what you said about the rational thing. Did they have, they're saying there's no rational reason for hope in the midst of the world we live in. Is that, was saying that or not?
I mean, yeah, they're saying that in terms of the science of what's going on, they can't figure out where hope comes from. I mean, why is someone look at the glass half full, and why is another guy supposed to half empty?
So it really is personality attached too, somewhat.
I think so.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the thing that I'm drawing out of it is just, it was sort of the juxtaposition of the devastation that some friends encountered, and yet where their well of hope comes from, and how empowering that is in the face of devastation that provides an ability to act. I mean, I think when you're hopeless, dude, that is welcome to couch potatohood. It sucks all the life and energy out of you when you don't have any hope. And what empowers us to action? I think it really is that impulse from above.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where else. I think we're talking about the. I noted the part about the imagined future, the ability to imagine the future, and some people do it with the sense of absolute hopelessness. I mean, I'm imagining the future, but God's not there. I'm all alone. I've got to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and looking forward is not. Imagining the future is not helpful to a lot of people. On the other hand, you've got others who can look forward to something, even in the face. I'm just thinking about
despite the facts.
Yeah, and I don't even mean in a healthy way. I mean, there are some people who, you know, don't have a job, aren't working, lay on the couch, but they're just imagining they're going to win the lottery on Friday, and their whole life's going to be put back together. And there's that kind of, which I would call irrational hope, too. There's a healthy way to look into the future and have hope that God's bigger than my circumstances, and hope that God's going to make sense of things in my life that today don't make sense. I mean, I think that's a great gift. And I think, as you're saying, that only can come from him. And I would hate to say, well, you know, only certain personalities get there. Other people, no, yeah. Because I don't think you're saying that. But
no, I think the thing that I'm saying is I don't know how to be a source of profound encouragement for people without immediately drawing from God. It's like I don't know where else to get that. Because when you look at a lot of the circumstances and you just have an average daily dose of the news of what's out there, man, a whole bunch of that is like seriously depressing. And the only perspective on it that I'm going like, you know, that's where I get locked in, is when I look at God and I'm going like, God, what is my future? You know, I'm always brought back to the little verses out of Jeremiah. It's like, you know, I'm here to give you a hope and a future. I don't know what future you have apart from being connected to him. I don't. I wouldn't want one apart from that. I don't have one apart from that. And I love the fact that in the midst of real tragedy, what an absolute power source, being able to lean and draw on God when everything's been devastated. How are those people okay? Well, they're hooked up to what absolutely matters. And they're drawing life out of that.
Yeah.
And that was just encouraging. I sat there, I went, you know, how awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. I think hope in the face of adversity is a great thing. But how do we help other people? I guess I'd be concerned. How do we help other people have it who don't have it? How do we help people who, because I think tragedies, particularly those really incredible tragedies that kind of take on a whole community together. We've seen that in Tuscaloosa, Joplin. A lot of tragedies for people happen in isolation. You know, they get cancer or a child dies in an accident or whatever. It's not like it doesn't infuse the community around them to bear it together. And a lot of people end up bearing some of their deepest pains alone. That's what I've noticed is real out of sync with you. You know, if a terrorist act kills 5 people, yeah, it's too bad. It's a tragic. It's a horrible thing. It kills 2,000 people. We buy off the families with certain amounts of taxpayer money. I mean, it seems to be an equitable sense of the way the world makes sense of tragedy. It has to be broad to garner the support of a wide group of people.
Right.
Most of us face our tragedies, I think, in private. We're in isolation. We're experiencing it, and we look around at other families around us, and, you know, life's going well. They've got food on the table. Their job's working. They've got kids and sports and things that are going on. They're making them happy. And so I feel like, you know, if I've lost my spouse, if I've, you know, if I'm battling cancer, I think a lot of people, and I do talk to some of us, feel like I'm going through this all alone. I've got no, and that's, I mean, I love that broad tragedy inspires community. I'm not trying to diminish that, but I do think there's also this isolation thing, which then how do people crawl out of that, and how do we help people and rally around folks?
I'm not going to pretend like I know, but I do know this. The biggest source of hope for me is the knowledge that I'm not alone. That doesn't mean I don't feel alone. That doesn't mean that I don't feel alienated, isolated, whatever. And I think pain, going through it by yourself, is a lot worse than being able to go through it with a sense of there's someone with me.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I draw upon the most from the Lord is it seems like when tragedy befalls a lot of people, they're looking through the lens of, you know, ultimately God is responsible, therefore what did I do? Or he abandoned me. I mean, that just seems to be the grid that most of the planet tends to try to interpret tragedy. And I'm going like, I don't interpret it that way. I can't.
And if they're not, some TV preacher will tell them
yeah,
it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and it'll be this date. The reality is I look at that and I go like, you know, life happens. But I have this enduring promise from the source of hope that says, I will not leave you nor forsake you. No, not ever. And I'm going like, all right, let's start there. God, you haven't abandoned me. What now? That just feels a whole lot better, honestly, than something happens and God's abandoned me. I mean,
no,
I don't know how to crawl out of that painful hole, the emotional bankruptcy of feeling like the God of the universe has forsaken me. And I'm going like, well, he hasn't. That would change everything right there. It may not change the circumstances of what loss you've incurred or what disappointment is there. But God hasn't abandoned you. God's there. He's in the midst. And that starts a whole different dialogue. And I think when that's my starting point, that's where I, you know, the article had nothing to do with this.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
But it was a trigger for me that it was like, gosh, when that one's nailed down in my life, that God gave me a triple negative. I mean, that's, you know, it's like the one value of knowing Greek, okay? It's just the fact that it's a triple negative. And I don't know how many sentences I've ever read anywhere on the planet that end up with a triple negative.
I'm sure I've written a few.
maybe have.
Not in a healthy way.
Sure, but that just isn't normal. And so it's like, okay, well, you have a triple negative. That's just saying, hey, it's not possible for me to abandon you. When you anchor that one down, I would love to have dialogued with the researchers. Can I just tell you something here? Here's one thing that you can anchor down. Let's see what that does. Let's graph a brain that receives that input and what happens to it. And does that person end up being optimistic? Because I don't believe it's just personality. I think it's a lot of programming. When you have put in your brain truth that just says, guess what? I'm not abandoned. I now have options of interpretation that are available to me emotionally. Whereas for other people, when they've already felt abandoned, even if that's not the truth, they've lost half the equation of what they can look at. And that's painful.
It is. And I like that not forsaken stuff. I also love the Romans 8:28, where God says, there's nothing going on in your life that I can't make sense out of, that I'll work these things together for some kind of good. And it's not that God's a victim of the capricious universe, though we sometimes are. I think we're part of the victims of a world out of sync with a creator. So tornadoes, earthquakes, stuff just happens that's destructive to us. I think that's true. But that God's big enough to be in those things with us, not just with us, but now making sense of this, working it together for good in our lives, for transformation, for whatever, greater freedom, liberty. I know most of the freedoms I value most in my life came to me through very traumatic circumstances, that I had to die to some things that I was struggling not to die to. And then you're kind of not forced to, but at least acknowledge this needs to die and ask God to help you go through that place. And I look at the best freedoms I enjoy today knowing they were won out of times of extremity. They weren't won in times of bliss and I just laying on my couch, had a neat revelation about Jesus, and that just changed my whole life. That rarely has happened. The better freedoms have come out of extremity, where you do get stripped down to what is really important and find out most of the stuff I've been chasing and grabbing and isn't significant in the larger sense of God's purpose unfolding in my life.
I think you need both. I mean, you know, I look at the deepest things that have perhaps shaped me, and I think the more traumatic ones that have left the deeper imprint, you know, I think those tend to be the harder things you go through. But if I look at just my journey, and I'm not going to extrapolate, I am every man. I am just me, okay? But I look at the fact that I can point to a handful of things that were just wonderful. And those are sources of real encouragement. And then I can look at the fact that I have navigated through some awful things. And just the fact that I'm still here is a source of encouragement, of being able to go, Lord, I don't know how to make it work with, I don't know how to just guts it out on the bad side. And I'm changed. I'm hurt. I look at the weaving of both and I just go, Lord, what, that's the richness of the tapestry of this thing called life.
I think that's what I meant by the rough times, though. What changes you is not the rough time, but somehow God making himself known in the darkness and some of the extremity challenging what you think is valuable, not valuable. I think that's where, and I'm all for the good stuff. I, every time God wants to visit me on my couch and transform me, I'm into it.
Woohoo!
But I look back and saying, you know, it's those moments of, gosh, just real hurt and feeling alone and pressing through to a reality that's inside the Father because I know I'm not alone, that has really borne the kind of fruit that you live in later. So I think somebody used the expression one time, those are good days to have behind you. And there are moments about my life I feel like that. I wouldn't want to go through them again, not for anything, but they're good days because of the work that God did in the midst of them and making himself known. That was powerful.
Where do you draw hope?
That this age will eventually end.
Okay. Is there a place? I mean, you're asking some tangible questions of, okay, how do we help folks that the science of optimism is not working? They don't have it innately. They would go, yeah, hope isn't rational, therefore I'm rational, and this is not working. I mean,
therefore, you're an idiot for being optimistic. Yeah.
Therefore, there's a bunch of people that fit on that side of the ledger. Where do you get your source of hope? I mean, it's not as if – I don't think the human being can work without it. I sort of feel like hope is like oxygen. When it's gone, everything just starts to fall down.
Yeah, and I'm not sure the human spirit can work it up either.
I'm wondering. Where do you get it from?
I know for me, I've got to go on a walk. I've got to withdraw from everything else coming at me. Again, in those moments of extremity, even just in moments of keeping centered on the things that are truly valuable, comes for me in just being alone with him for a season. And I don't mean like going on a silent retreat for 6 months. I just mean go take a 10-minute walk in the down the neighborhood or in the backyard or out in the forest or just go for a walk and just say, God, I need you. Lord, I need you to show me what you're doing here. And I take hope. I mean, I think there's a general sense of hope that's always there because two reasons. I know who he is, and that gives me hope. I look back at my life. I think that one of the Hebrew terms for faith is looking at your life backwards, and you see where God has been faithful over so many moments, even when I haven't been, he was. So I take, in a general sense, there's hope that I can just I can fall back on in those things. But when I'm going through a very specific thing for which there isn't a lot of wisdom yet, or I don't know what's happening, or I'm feeling tossed around, it takes some just seasoning my heart with him in a conversation on a walk. For me, it works best on a walk than anywhere else, or I can do it in the car on the drive if I have to, but I'm trying to concentrate on the other drivers when I'm doing that. Makes it tough.
Good, thank you. The rest of us on the road appreciate
other walkers, you just don't have to be that aware of them until they get really close. But
collisions are not as dangerous.
Yeah, for me, it's sliding into, it's leaning in on. I don't know the words to use. Hebrews, I guess, would draw near to God. And it is that drawing in my heart that needs to crawl into that presence. And not that he isn't there at other times, but I guess what I'm crawling into is the awareness of that presence. And then hopefully getting a glimpse of something he's up to, something that makes sense of this, some little nugget of hope or direction or purpose in this, that, or even the hope that I don't have the answer yet, but I will when I need it, and so I can keep on the course I'm going.
Would it be fair that, I'm not trying to lead you to a conclusion, but what I'm hearing, I would tend to summarize in the realm of going to him for a thing called perspective. God, the way I'm seeing it, it's not feeling so good. Is there a way you're seeing this that has a different set of emotions? I mean, it's like, help me see this the way you do. That's where I think my priorities get realigned. That's when a different possibility of something I'm stuck in opens up. You know, I can try to sort things out, but knowing that I have precious little ability to change people, I really have zero control over that. So it's a matter of like, okay, well, that's not going to work. So I can kick against whatever goads I want, but I'm not really going to get anywhere other than a couple of bruised toes.
There's some good psalms you can pray, though, that give you the illusion you can.
I'm going to kick their teeth in, oh God.
But it doesn't work.
But I look at that, and I think most of the time what I'm really needing is just like, Lord, I cannot see in my finiteness what you can see from an infinite perspective. Help me see what you see. When you're struggling with the person that I don't like, it's more like, what's going to change that? Lord, you love them. You know them. Show me. Give me your heart to see what you see. That isn't just, well, what the heck? You know, I'm God, so I have to love everybody. I sort of like, he's got purposeful, intentional reasons for everything. That helps in relationship dynamics where it's like, Lord, please allow me to see what I can't. You know, my little issues, I can't see past. His, when I start to get that, I can. And so most of the time, I'm going to him in those same situations. I really am looking for something of hope because it's the lack of it that has stopped me.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of feel like hope in me is the gas, you know, is the gas in my car that is like, dude, hit the pedal. And without that, it's kind of like, hey, I'm losing. I don't have any drive for this.
Yeah, I think what you mean by perspective, I'm using a different word, purpose, but I think it's the same thing. We see what God's up to and his hand in it.
That was the second thing I was going to add in terms of when I have a sense that there is a purpose that God has given me a sense of direction for. Those are the fallback places. You know, it's like, when were things last clear? And I go back to the directives of, Lord, what are you doing in this situation? And what was it that I got brought into and why? And how do I sort it out from there with a sense of, you know, I know we've poked at, you know, purpose-driven whatever, but I don't like purpose-driven everything, but I do know the power of purpose. To be able to go, okay, here's how I can start to sort through some things that aren't as clear.
Yeah, I just don't think purpose is driven. I think purpose is an invitation into something God's doing. But to me, I think what we're talking about right now is a deeper way of praying. And I think through most of my journey, my prayers were mostly about fix that person, change this situation, give me this that I want. The prayers were always, God, fix my life so I'm not having the struggle that I'm having. And
I don't find it was work very
much. Well, that's why I finally gave him up about 40, 42. It took me a long time to realize, you know, God's not doing, and it left me incredibly frustrated. And I think that kind of praying does leave you in doubt then of whether or not God loves you, because he's certainly not doing the things for you you would do.
He apparently is not listening, because he's not doing what I've asked.
Well, he's not doing what I would do for me, and I love me. So obviously, he doesn't love me too. And I were laughing about that, but I honestly think a lot of people get stuck right there.
Yeah.
I've been praying. I've asked God to change this. I've asked God to remove my boss and give me a better one. I've asked God to get me this job or get me a better house. And I do think that prayer lists of here's what I want that will let me live my life without anxiety. I got a letter from someone yesterday, incredible pain. I could read it. I don't know the person. They don't even speak English as a first language. So it was, I could tell in their writing that this is going to be very difficult to communicate. And so fearful about everything from family to job to a divorce, remarriage situation, just everything, just fear, and wanted to know and specific questions. Answer this, answer this, answer this. Back, I said, you know, somehow, not knowing you and knowing we have a language problem here, I'm not sure I could answer these questions if we were face to face in 3 hours. But I sense where you've lost something is that you don't have trust that God's in your life bigger than your unanswered questions, bigger than your unmet expectations. And I just wrote that kind of encouragement, just saying, you know, there is a God who is with you and a God you can know and a God whose purpose, then I don't have to have everything answered, everything fixed. That deeper kind of praying to me is crawling inside his perspective, your word, his purpose. To see, okay, this makes some sense. God's bigger than this.
You know, a verse that I tend to take wonderful comfort in, where it says that, you know, for God is at work in you both to will and to do according to his good pleasure. And you're sitting there like, all right, I got to figure out what you're doing, God, because what I'm doing isn't working. So I need to sort of back up and go, where are you at in this? What are you doing? If you are going to be at work in all things for my good, and I look at that good as that's to conform me into the image of Jesus Christ, and I don't really know what could ever happen to me that he couldn't use in that direction. So it's like, if it's according to my comfort and pleasure, that's not working so good. If it's according to my transformation and conformity into his son, pretty much everything, good and bad, can fit in that equation as far as what he's doing. But I'm going, Lord, how do I partner with what you are doing in this situation? I find myself, whatever, you'll fill in the blank, disappointed, frustrated, lost, confused. I mean, all those adjectives of just going like, not working. In those moments, it's like, well, Lord, help me. What are you doing here? Because I'm doing something and it doesn't seem to be working. I assume you're at work in here. Help me see that.
Yeah, and part of what I think you're saying, or at least what I would add to that, is don't pitch your tent in your pain, which I do think.
That's not very fun.
It's not. I am, and until this changes and whatever, and there's got to be that, you know, brush off my jeans, get up off the, I don't wear jeans, but get up off the ground, and God, what's next? How do I keep following you, even with this tragedy now? My home got blown up by a tornado. My house got wiped out by a tsunami. Whatever. You could sit and stew in the pain of that forever. Or you can get up and say, okay, this has happened to me, but I want to go on. So God, take me on from here. This now is my new reality, and I know some people mourn their old reality, and there's a season of mourning. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people hurting because they've been through a huge tragedy. I'm not trying to push people through that. I am saying somewhere in that process, you got to realize I don't live here. I've got to move on, and new realities have defined my life, and I don't love those realities, maybe, but I'm going to embrace those realities in terms of what God's larger purpose might be in moving me forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in those places that people can get stuck, they can get shipwrecked. And as silly and as trite as this might sound, you know, I've always remembered someone says, the quickest way out of the wilderness is to keep walking.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of going like, you know what, there is some real wisdom in that. Not just, well, I'm just going to walk. Darn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Bad advice if you're lost in the woods.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
people looking for you. Stop,
but in terms of the fact that, you know what, what I take from that is there are just some simple realities, simple reaffirmations of what is true, regardless of what I'm presently experiencing. God hadn't left me. That is a massive one to do. That, you know, God does have a future for me. You know, it didn't end here. You've oftentimes said, well, this is the middle of a chapter, not the end. And it's like, I find those kinds of words incredibly powerful in moments of pain where you're just going like, okay, stop seeing this in its totality through this aspect. I will draw all the wrong conclusions there. I need to step back and go, Lord, let's rebuild what I do have. And it's that sense of going, thankfulness. As goofy it is, that's what I often do with my kids when, you know, they come home and they're in tears or something's gone bad. It's sort of like, guess what? I can't change what happened that caused that. I'm going to validate the emotions. It's not just, hey, what's wrong with you? You know, supposed to be cheery in my presence. It's like, no.
I want cheer, Dad.
Come on. Yeah. Let's validate what's going on. But the only way I know to redirect the emotions so that we don't downward spiral, because I mean, I don't think that that's all that helpful to us. It really is the reminders of, well, what am I thankful for? I may not be thankful for that. That's fine. But can I see what I can be? And appreciation, I think, is like a fresh breeze into my soul that will help my boat get someplace. And I think that's an important aspect to turn to in moments where you're just going like,
Yeah, not a dishonest kind of thankful for crud, like you said, but finding where we can be. I know for Sarah and I, we've had, you know, one of those tense discussions over whatever, and it's easy to just kind of stay parked in those emotions that you're feeling, you know, even after you've already said, hey,
you build
we're
your
sorry.
Brick walls and you bunker down.
Oh, night, yeah, it could be that. It could also just be, you know, I'm kind of stewing in my disappointment. She might be in hers or your fence or whatever, and it does take a lighter moment, an affectionate moment. It takes that willingness to kind of walk out of the tent that's pitched there on that site. And, you know, and it does. It does take that willingness to kind of lift yourself out of the stewing of the moment and get onto something more real. And we've noticed that too. It takes even a funny joke, just something that happens, or we'll just you just give up saying, ah, it's not worth it anymore. Let's talk about something else. And
yeah,
you move past it.
I mean, that's... That tends to be my function at the dinner table, is to find some injection of levity into the recounting of everyone's day. I mean, when things are hard, and it's like we need to be able to talk through that. I mean, I do think that denial is not a helpful road to let's walk down that. Everything's fantastic. It's like, well, okay, you know.
No, let's laugh in the face of pain. That, yeah, that's better.
I feel great. I think God inhabits the honesty of that, but I do think that, you know what, I have a hard time looking up at Him and finding any sort of down, depressed culture in heaven. I mean, I look at what's going on. I'm going like, no, I don't think God is in a depressed place. I, you know, can he be disappointed? I think he can. I think he can hope for something, and I think he can, you know, I mean, this is my little brain.
And is he not pained by all the pain in the world?
I think of course he profoundly is.
Yes. But somebody said one time, God is the most, I don't know the word, optimistic, joyful maybe, joyful presence in the universe.
Yeah.
And even Jesus, the night before he's going to go to the cross, saying that my joy might be in you, that your joy might be full. I mean, there's a sense in God, even with all the suffering in the world and the pain and the stuff that God contains in himself, there is a greater joy there that goes, he is the most joyful presence in the universe. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah, and I think one of the other really valuable things in terms of what is the source of hope, where do I find it when I don't have it? I don't know about you, but for me, the wells that I tend to draw from, they really are those moments where it's like, well, Lord, I know the dream you've put inside me. The bigger picture elements where I don't see how this is the outworking of that right now, but I know that this is what you've purposed me for. This is what I'm engaged in doing. And this is that sense that this is your purpose and plan.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things I find incredibly helpful, like, you know, a helicopter coming and getting you out of the demilitarized zone someplace. It's like, Lord, bring me up and renew those things in me. Let me see those things and reorient accordingly. And it really is... I find that those are incredibly helpful, and I have to hold on to those because I think they can get stolen.
And how much of that hope has to be vested in the ultimate future? I mean, I look at Scripture, you know, the dew is there. You look at your life here is like the dew in the morning. It's here and gone. And I think God has planted things in my heart, and I think other people's as well, that really aren't going to be fulfilled here. The Hebrews 11 language, many of these died in faith, having never apprehended the promise. I think of my brother, died at 49 of MS, had great visions to go behind the Iron Curtain and studying Russian and Bible when he was in university, praying for the day the Iron Curtain would fall. The time it fell, his MS was so advanced he couldn't do the very thing that he had dreamed to do in his heart, and ended up dying at 49. And to me, and I've prayed a lot about this, I don't know how to make sense of my brother's life if you purely look between birth and death in this age. God sees something much wider. I think this life here is but a dew, and like a dew or a vapor, it just is here and then it's gone. And that's why I talk about the end of the chapter versus the middle of the chapter, because I think all this is just chapter one of a larger story we can't even comprehend yet. And there is that for me, that the ultimate hope, the ultimate destiny is that all that God desires for Wayne is not going to happen in this life, in this body as it is. And there is a resident hope in my life that, hey, there's a greater day coming and a greater participation in things we know in part and see in part, but ultimately a greater good's coming. And I take a lot of hope there as well.
Yeah, I mean, you think of Paul's words that, you know, this is but a momentary light affliction. Well, he's writing that for some pretty tough situations where he's going, like, oh, momentary light is lashings and beatings and
shipwreck.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah. You know, when he gives that litany of things that they've gone through, you just go, like, dude, you experienced some severe life and challenge and trauma. But there was a real source of hope, and it was he saw a sense of the eternal weight of glory, where it is, yeah, there was an eternal mindset that said, okay, I'm traveling through this unto a greater reality. And that empowered his soul, I think, to be able to go through, to have perspective about what was going on, and to realize that I don't know that this life is I don't think the lens of achievement is a very effective one for Lot. Because what we're trying to make our mark and accomplish, God may be going like, dude, I'm looking for transformation. Yeah. That doesn't show up in units and ledgers of achievement. It does in me, and it does in terms of the change that he's wrought. But the vehicle by which that comes may not be the way that we interpret it down here. And so when your mind is stayed on the fact that, God, I know what you're about. You're about transforming me. Then in light of the eternity of what that is, it's like, yeah, I can have great hope that just says, no, I'm not going to soldier through this life, because I think that there's a greater joy and hope for this life. But I see what he's doing in it. And I do think that if you don't have that eternal perspective, this is tough.
Yeah, I remember a Greek professor telling us in 2 Timothy when Paul says, the hour of my departure is at hand. He said, that's not the departure as the end of something. That's the departure on a beginning of a great adventure. It's that kind of departure. And I thought, gosh, that's
great. Your flight has arrived.
Yeah, like you're finally getting on Star Wars. You're finally getting on Space Mountain. You finally got to the front of the line. You know, there was a sense of not Paul saying, gosh, it's all over, I'm done. But I'm departing now on a greater journey. And this is the beginning of something, not the end of something. And I think when Scripture strikes to our life here being a vapor or a dew or whatever, it really is saying, this is not the most significant point of your existence. This is a point. I'm in it with you. I'm going to make sense of this world. I want, as David said, I want to have hope in the land of the living, not just hope in the highways and byways someday. But all of that culminates somewhere other than here. And Paul's 1 Corinthians 15, if our hope is just in this age, then it's pretty miserable if that's where our hope is. But if it goes beyond that, then it encompasses this age and embraces something better still coming.
Well, I just think of the admonition that, you know, we're to be ready at all times to give, in essence, a defense for the hope that is within us. And you end up going like, the hope that's within us. What do you know? I think it's a hymn. I think that guy Jesus, that is my, at the end of the day, that's the best definition of the hope that I have within me. That's who's empowering me. That's where I'm headed. That's who I'm being transformed into. That's the perspective when I'm looking through his eyes that I can. And I sort of feel like when you make this a relational component of, hey, God, if there's one thing I absolutely need for my soul, I need that sense of hope that's within me. That's what empowers.
Yeah, and if you're going to give an account for the hope that lies in you, you got to assume there's people asking you why you're hopeful in the face of whatever you're involved in.
Yeah, they don't understand it because guess what? It's irrational.
And I think that's, you know, how do people see us? How do people see me? Do they see me hopeful in the world I'm going at? Or do they see me down and I'm sure they've seen both. There have been times I've been really down, for sure. But I think that saying, here's the place to live inside of that makes some sense, and where Jesus wants to, my joy in you, you're joyful, living in the hope. And then people are coming to you and say, Wayne, why is there such a hopeful disposition in your life? That's if we're giving a defense, it's because people are challenging why we have it when it didn't seem like we should.
Hey, do you remember what Weebles are?
Weebles?
Yeah.
Little Weeble people?
Yeah. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down?
That was after my time,
okay.
I believe.
That's
your childhood.
It's in my prime. I have laughed going like, you know what? Why do those little Weeble creatures, you know, there's just little fun toys kids play with that because of the weight that is in their feet, you can knock them all around, but they, well, in essence, always land.
They'll right themselves, yeah.
I look at that and I'm just going like, that has been a fun little image that me and Jesus have talked about in terms of, Lord, it's the hope that you have placed in me that gives me, my feet, a firm foundation that I think gives you the Weeble anointing. You can get knocked around, but if that's there and that's anchored, you can get back up.
And that's not a human trait. I love
no.
what you say. If you don't find that in Jesus, you're not going to find it. You can't call it up on your own, but if you can find it, then maybe the calling is to be Weeble people, huh?
Yeah, baby.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,